Marie-Claude was tired. The past 36 months had been an endless array of meetings, working groups, and processes of delegation as she gradually extricated herself from all her previous duties to focus on the evacuation program. The past few seasons had once again broken all records, turning the streams of climate display seas into an inundation. Even the concept of season was a misnomer these days. Rather, a series of extreme weather events, summer or winter, continued to stretch the resources of the coalition of non-aligned nations to the limit. If they weren't evacuated, people either died of heat exhaustion, or they froze, or drowned. Rome had reached 52 degrees the previous summer. There had not been enough room in the makeshift morgues to deal with the bodies of the elderly, young, and infirm. A decision was made to simply bury people in mass graves to stop the spread of disease. In Britain, thousands had frozen to death in their homes as the Arctic winter took hold, the Gulf Stream finally having given up the ghost. The entire remnant population of the Netherlands was now encamped in squalor around Limburg as the already reinforced polders and dikes were overwhelmed by storm surges. Making room for whole towns and villages in the already overcrowded camps and storm shelters was becoming impossible. Marie-Claude had no difficulty in securing an executive declaration to allocate all available funds to the programme. As a consequence, what had at first appeared as a cynical and ridiculous pipe dream had grown apace. Professor Trapinski had been given a staggering budget to develop, test, and refine the cryogenic storage systems and build the facilities necessary to put large numbers of refugees to sleep. The early live tests had been gruesome, even if they had been inflicted on convicted looters and rapists. Those who did survive generally woke up, if it could be called that, in a vegetative state, especially if they stayed under for any prolonged period. The lack of nervous stimulation while asleep appeared to have permanent side effects. And so, a second research team had been established to stimulate brain function whilst keeping the subjects in suspension. This in turn engendered a whole series of problems, as those subjects tended to be psychotic when awakened. But progress had been made in leaps and bounds. The program had reached a point where it was safe to put people to sleep. The storage systems, or capsules, as Trapinski called them, could be manufactured relatively simply and cheaply, and the application of virtual reality technologies to sleeping subjects was working. But running the software to keep the sleepers actively engaged in their simulated environment while sufficiently comatose for cold storage was still posing a few problems, not the least of which was the processing capacity required. Marie-Claude methodically dealt with these challenges as they arose. She was amazed at what had been achieved in such a short space of time, but needs must. She had to constantly remind herself that if they did not undertake research on live subjects, millions more would die as the planet continued to deteriorate. But the mental and physical toll on her aging body was almost unbearable. In an unprecedented action given her nature, she had gone to see the compound doctor, who had run a few diagnostics but was rather evasive when questioned, telling her to wait for the results. Meanwhile, she continued on a diet of 16-hour shifts and strong black coffee. But the effort had been worth it. They soon reached a stage where more attention needed to be paid to logistics than research. The current challenge was how to ship significant numbers of future sleepers off-planet and where to house them. The United Nations States Aerospace Program facility on the Moon had been retrofitted and greatly enlarged. UNSAP dedicated an upgraded version of the ancient NASA space shuttle to transport the capsules, a stopgap until something better could be developed. A dozen specially selected volunteers were recruited and frozen, accompanied by a team of technicians to monitor and report on their condition. The expense had been astronomical. The only grain of comfort was that the global population was generally so preoccupied with survival that the loss of human life, reckless expenditure, and ruthless securing of the necessary resources went by almost unnoticed. So far, there had been no riots and no mass demonstrations. But that was largely because no one knew that the evacuation program, and not the changes, was the cause of the increased privation. Sometimes bad weather made for a good scapegoat.